I'm Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is January 19th, 2013. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, The Many Worlds Interpretation of Quantum Physics by Eliezer Yudkowsky. His essay begins, Macroscopic quantum superpositions, also known as the many worlds interpretation, was proposed in 1957 and brought to the general attention of the scientific community in 1970. Ever since, it has steadily gained in popularity. As of 2008, many worlds may or may not be endorsed by a majority of theoretical physicists. Attempted opinion polls conflict on this point. Of course, science is not supposed to be an opinion poll, but anyone who tells you that many worlds is science fiction is simply ignorant. When a theory is slowly persuading scientists, despite all academic inertia, and more graduate students grow up familiar with it, at what point should one go ahead and declare a temporary winner pending new evidence? Eliezer, the answer to that question is never. There is no need to declare a winner, temporary or otherwise. Science will determine the winner despite your attempt to force a vote on reality. When science has accumulated enough evidence to convince a consensus of physicists that one interpretation is correct, or that a new interpretation is correct, then and only then can you declare a winner. And what do you think will happen if you declare a winner? Nothing. Nothing will change. Physicists will go on experimenting and testing theories as they always have. So your rush to declare a winner accomplishes nothing. Your impatience with science being unwilling to crown your personal favorite betrays the insecurity of your position. Perhaps that is why you trumpet your certainty so loudly. His essay continues. Reading through the reference posts will give you a very basic introduction to quantum mechanics. Algebra is involved, but no calculus, by which you may nonetheless gain an understanding sufficient to see, and not just be told, that the modern case for many worlds has become overwhelming. Not just plausible, not just strong, but overwhelming. Eliezer, if your claim were true, then there would be an overwhelming support for many worlds. But there isn't. There is still a large number of physicists who back the Copenhagen interpretation. Also, there are quite a number of other interpretations. I don't think you are in a position to justify using the word overwhelming, because there are simply too many physicists who have not been overwhelmed. He wrote, single-world versions of quantum mechanics just don't work. Eliezer, it all depends on why they don't work. They may not work because they are wrong, or they may not work because physicists have not yet reached the level of understanding necessary to explain all the results they see in their experiments. And Eliezer, your version only works for you and those who believe as you do. It doesn't work for those scientists who don't. He continues, and all the legendary confusingness and mysteriousness of quantum mechanics stems from this essential fact. But enough telling, let me show you. And now he has a bullet list, beginning with quantum explanations. Quantum mechanics doesn't deserve its fearsome reputation. If you tell people something is supposed to be mysterious, they won't understand it. It's human intuitions that are strange or weird. Physics itself is perfectly normal. Eliezer, I find that description misleading. To paint quantum entanglement as unmysterious and perfectly normal is to paint a false picture of reality. Even the world's greatest scientists, of which you are not one, cannot explain this phenomenon. When the world's leading scientists cannot explain an observation, that defines mysterious. He wrote, talking about historical erroneous concepts like particles or waves is just asking to confuse people. Present the real unified quantum physics straight out. So Eliezer, you consider a particle to be an erroneous historical concept? That's odd because physicists still talk about and experiment with particles. In fact, recent experiments have just determined the roundest object ever measured in the universe. Know what it was, Eliezer? It was the electron, a particle. And in the Word document associated with this podcast, I supplied him a link to that news article. His next bullet, distinct configurations. Since configurations are over the combined state of all the elements in a system, adding a sensor that detects whether a particle went one way or the other becomes a new element of the system that can make configurations distinct instead of identical. This confused the living daylights out of early quantum experimenters because it meant that things behaved differently when they tried to measure them. But it's not only measuring instruments that do the trick. Any sensitive physical element will do. Eliezer, two physicists share the 2012 Nobel Prize in Physics for developing methods that allowed them to make quantum measurements without disturbing the system. His next bullet, where philosophy meets science. In retrospect, supposing that quantum physics had anything to do with consciousness was a big mistake. Could philosophers have told the physicists so? But we don't usually see philosophers sponsoring major advances in physics. Why not? Eliezer, a better question is, why should we? We don't see historians sponsoring major advances in physics either. Why would you even ask such an ignorant question? His next bullet, can you prove two particles are identical? You wouldn't think that it would be possible to do an experiment that told you that two particles are completely identical, not just to the limit of experimental precision, but perfectly. Eliezer, that depends on what you mean by identical. The fact that they are not the same object immediately proves they are not identical. For example, even if similar in every respect, they are not similar in their location in space. Therefore, the quantum foam surrounding each particle could not possibly be the same. The neutrinos that bombard each particle could not possibly be the same neutrinos, etc. He continues, you could even give a precise-sounding philosophical argument for why it was not possible, but the argument would have a deeply buried assumption. Quantum physics violates this deep assumption, making the experiment easy. Eliezer, there was nothing philosophical about my argument. His next bullet, the quantum arena. Instead of a system state being associated with a single point in a classical configuration space, the instantaneous real state of a quantum system is a complex amplitude distribution over a quantum configuration space. What creates the illusion of individual particles, like an electron caught in a trap, is a plaid distribution. Eliezer, how do you explain how scientists were able to capture and measure your illusion? How were they able to determine every spherical point on the surface of that illusion to an accuracy of 26 decimal places? Eliezer, that's one hell of an illusion. His next bullet, Feynman paths. Instead of thinking that a photon takes a single straight path through space, we can regard it as taking all possible paths through space and adding the amplitudes for every possible path. Nearly all the paths cancel out, unless we do clever quantum things, so that some paths add instead of canceling out. Eliezer, clever quantum things are unnecessary. The paths nearest the shortest distance will add instead of canceling out. If an electron is traveling through all possible paths, then these paths must be physically separated. So when a photon strikes an electron, how does it strike all possible electrons at the same time? Does it instantly split into as many photons as there are possible electron paths? Or does it pick one? He continues, then we can make light do funny tricks for us, like reflecting off a mirror in such a way that the angle of incidence doesn't equal the angle of reflection. Eliezer, the angle of incidence only appears to equal the angle of reflection due to the cancellation of most of the probability amplitudes for the longer paths. However, experiment has shown that some of these probabilities are occasionally realized. That's why they're called probabilities. That is not a funny trick, Eliezer. It is basic experimental quantum physics. He writes, but ordinarily, nearly all the paths except an extremely narrow band cancel out. This is one of the keys to recovering the hallucination of classical physics. His next bullet, no individual particles. One of the chief ways to confuse yourself while thinking about quantum mechanics is to think as if photons were little billiard balls bouncing around. The appearance of little billiard balls is a special case of a deeper level on which there are only multi-particle configurations and amplitude flows. Eliezer, the billiard ball analogy, while not perfect, is a far more accurate representation of reality than amplitude flows, which are only mathematical probabilities and are not real objects. Scientists can detect and count those little billiard balls you disparage. Probability amplitudes only exist as concepts. He wrote, it is easy to set up physical situations in which there exists no fact of the matter as to which electron was originally which. Eliezer, it is also easy to set up physical situations in which particles do not exhibit wave behavior. Why does the fact that photons travel in waves prohibit their existence as individual particles? If there are no individual particles, why did you refer to a configuration earlier as multi-particle? His next bullet, the so-called Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Unlike classical physics, in quantum physics, it is not possible to separate out a particle's position from its momentum. Eliezer, before relying too heavily on Heisenberg, you may want to read this first. And I provided him a link to an article where scientists challenged Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. It seems, Eliezer, that you may have spoken too soon. Maybe that's why you're in such a rush to take a vote. He writes, the evolution of the amplitude distribution over time involves things like taking the second derivative in space and multiplying by I to get the first derivative in time. Eliezer, isn't I the imaginary part of a complex number? He wrote, the end result of this time evolution rule is that blobs of particle presence appear to race around in physical space. The notion of an exact particular momentum or an exact particular position is not something that can physically happen. Eliezer, then how can a photon strike a photon receptor in the back of the human eye? To make that hit required that the photon get to an exact particular position. His next bullet, on being decoherent. When a sensor measures a particle whose amplitude distribution stretches over space, perhaps seeing if the particle is to the left or right of some dividing line, then the standard laws of quantum mechanics call for the sensor plus particle system to evolve into a state of particle left, sensor measures left, plus particle right, sensor measures right. But when we humans look at the sensor, it only seems to say left or right, never a mixture like left-right. This, of course, is because we ourselves are made of particles. Eliezer, you mean the particles that you earlier said don't exist? He wrote, and these particles are subject to the standard quantum laws that imply decoherence. Eliezer, I can't count the times I've heard physicists say that the classic laws of physics break down at the quantum level. So what evidence do you offer that the laws which operate on a quantum level apply to us at our level. His next bullet, the conscious Sarites paradox. Decoherence is implicit in quantum physics, not an extra law on top of it. Asking exactly when one world splits into two worlds may be like asking when, if you keep removing grains of sand from a pile, it stops becoming a heap. Eliezer, nice false analogy. On one hand, you use an example of an object dividing, and then try to make it analogous to a continuum. His next bullet, decoherence is pointless. There is no exact point at which decoherence suddenly happens. Eliezer, that contradicts experimental results that report wave function collapse at the instant a measurement is attempted. Next bullet, the Born probabilities. The last serious, mysterious question left in quantum physics, when a quantum world splits in two, why do we seem to have a greater probability of ending up in the larger blob, exactly proportional to the integral of the squared modulus? It's an open problem, but non-mysterious answers have been proposed. Eliezer, you said when a quantum world splits in two. At this point in time, the word should be if. When you finally get your consensus, then you can change it back to when. Next bullet, spooky action at a distance. The no communication theorem, as Einstein argued long ago, the quantum physics of his era, that is, the single global world interpretation of quantum physics, in which experiments have single unique random results, violates special relativity. It imposes a preferred space of simultaneity and requires a mysterious influence to be transmitted faster than light, which mysterious influence can never be used to transmit any useful information. Getting rid of the single global world dispels this mystery and puts everything back to normal again. Eliezer, getting rid of science and saying God did it also dispels all mysteries and puts everything back to normal again. Like your solution? It's real convenient, but you still haven't offered any evidence that other worlds exist. Next bullet, collapse postulates. Early physicists simply didn't think of the possibility of more than one world. It just didn't occur to them, even though it's the straightforward result of applying the quantum laws at all levels. Eliezer, what evidence justifies applying quantum laws at all levels? In the macroscopic world in which we live, can you point to an example of entanglement? Can you provide an example of anything that exists in a superposition? He wrote, so they accidentally invented a completely and strictly unnecessary part of quantum theory to ensure there was only one world, a law of physics that says that parts of the wave function mysteriously and spontaneously disappear when decoherence prevents us from seeing them anymore. Eliezer, nothing I have read about the conclusions of early physicists strikes me as being accidentally invented. They strike me as being deeply thought out by the world's greatest scientists. You also said that they invented their conclusions to ensure only one world. But as you yourself admitted earlier, they didn't think of the possibility of more than one world. Beautiful contradiction, Eliezer. He wrote, if such a law really existed, it would be the only nonlinear, non-unitary, non-differentiable, non-local, non-CPT symmetric, acausal, faster-than-light phenomenon in all of physics. Eliezer, because faster-than-light phenomena have never been proven to exist, there could not be such a law. So your straw man argument failed. His next bullet, if many worlds had come first. If early physicists had never made the mistake and thought immediately to apply the quantum laws at all levels to produce macroscopic decoherence, then collapse postulates would today seem like a completely crackpot theory. Eliezer, as for crackpot theories, I can think of no theory in history more absurd than the one you are promoting. That when you make a decision in a crowded theater to pass gas, a new universe is instantly created. He wrote, in addition to their other problems, like faster than light, the collapse postulate would be the only physical law that was informally specified, often in dualistic, meaning mentalistic, terms, because it was the only fundamental law adopted without precise evidence to nail it down. Eliezer, the collapse postulate is not an adopted law, so precise evidence is not required to nail it down. If it ever becomes a law, then you'll need the nails. In the last bullet, Many Worlds, One Best Guess, summarizes the arguments that nail down macroscopic decoherence, also known as the Many Worlds interpretation. Eliezer, what evidence do you offer to support macroscopic decoherence, or do you just have arguments? That is exactly the same thing I am offered by creationists in lieu of evidence. Arguments. He continues, the arguments that nail down macroscopic decoherence concludes that Many Worlds wins outright, given the current state of evidence. The argument should have been over 50 years ago. Eliezer, but the argument wasn't over 50 years ago, and the argument still isn't over today. What you need isn't more arguments. What you need is evidence. And finally, he wrote, new physical evidence could reopen it, but we have no particular reason to expect this. Eliezer, as the 2012 Nobel Prizes proved, you may not have a particular reason to expect more physical evidence, but it continues to pour in anyway. Eliezer, one little piece of advice. When one does not have a scientific consensus to back up one's position, the proper path is to shut up and calculate. In other words, stop worrying about declaring victory and concentrate instead on discovering evidence like those two Nobel physicists just did. That way, Eliezer, if it turns out that you're wrong, the crow won't taste as bad. And now we move to the science segment. Today's story, neurons made from stem cells drive brain activity after transplantation in laboratory model. Researchers and patients look forward to the day when stem cells might be used to replace dying brain cells in Alzheimer's disease and other neurodegenerative conditions. Scientists are currently able to make neurons and other brain cells from stem cells, but getting these neurons to properly function when transplanted to the host has proven to be more difficult. Now researchers have found a way to stimulate stem cell-derived neurons to direct cognitive function after transplantation to an existing neural network. They showed for the first time that embryonic stem cells that were programmed to become neurons can integrate into existing brain circuits and fire patterns of electrical activity that are critical for consciousness and neural network activity. The trick turned out to be light. Researchers transplanted human stem cell-derived neurons into a rodent hippocampus, the brain's information processing center. Then they specifically activated the transplanted neurons with optogenetic stimulation, a relatively new technique that combines light and genetics to precisely control cellular behavior in living tissues or animals. To determine if the newly transplanted light-stimulated human neurons were actually working, they measured high-frequency oscillations in existing neurons at a distance from the transplanted ones. They found that the transplanted neurons triggered the existing neurons to fire high-frequency oscillations. Faster neuronal oscillations are usually better. They're associated with enhanced performance in sensory motor and cognitive tasks. To sum it up, the transplanted human neurons not only conducted electrical impulses, they also roused neighboring neuronal networks into firing at roughly the same rate they would in a normal functioning hippocampus. The therapeutic outlook for this technology looks promising. Based on these results, doctors might be able to restore brain activity and thus restore motor and cognitive function by transplanting easily manipulated neuronal cells derived from embryonic stem cells. And now for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Tonight, Oscar Wilde. Since he has been previously quoted, I will skip the biography. Here is the quote from Oscar Wilde. Listen carefully, it's a short one. Life is too important to be taken seriously.
Are you ready, Bruce?